This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Gearing up, zeroing in Thursday, round one of the NFL draft. We got Pistons playoff action. We're going to get to that coming up at 9:35. We'll pit stop on the Red Wings because, well, Larkin said something. Took a little bit of a shot. Steve Yzerman. Let's play that for people. John is a former player. What do you make of it?
I love the fact that he is willing to voice and be the leader you need a captain to be, that they were hoping for reinforcements. They were hoping to get better going into the stretch run. What I don't like is the way he talked about feeling deflated after they didn't make an ad. You know what? It's sometimes business doesn't work that way. It's not always going to. Maybe the calls were made, and we could talk about the Yzerman angle of this. We did at the trade deadline, but you've got to find a way. All right, this is our team. Well, you got to find a way to go out there and get some wins. And March, as we know, has not been good for a number of years, but especially this year.
Nobody wants excuse making, and nobody wants to hear it from a player who underachieved during that stretch, Dylan Larkin. But as the captain of this team, you do have to stick up for guys and speak to what guys in the room are saying to you. And if the collective feeling is Yzerman isn't showing enough urgency, I tend to agree with the roster. They waited too long to fire Lalonde, went on two different 7-game win streaks, and while they were fighting for a playoff spot, they didn't do anything. How would you feel? Would you feel that your general manager had your back? I think it's human nature. I think it's understandable. It's not an excuse. Those guys still have to play better. But I'm happy he publicly said something because you know privately those guys have to have been talking about it. Steve, you got to do more. You got to help us. I'm not a young player. Larkin at one point brought up that we're not far off from the guys he drafts in the fourth round, never playing with him. And maybe never playing at all. But I think there's an urgency that he feels and that the players feel to try to get over the hump that they don't see matched by the general manager. That's what that says.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. Whether you think Larkin's right or wrong, it's a problem that there is a disconnect between what the roster sees and what Steve sees.
You also have to be able to do enough with the way the roster is to give your GM a reason to go out and add.
Well, they would argue the two different 7-game win streaks put them in position to still make the playoffs after a disastrous start, and that was
right.
Not
and
met
I know
with-
there's always a counter. Well, the coach was the problem before. And then it was, well, we went on these 2 7-game win streaks, but then it was the layoff. They couldn't come back after the Four Nations.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what – there's always going to be excuses. And at some point, you just have to go out there and win games. Now, I think the 4 losses going into the trade deadline, it certainly didn't help. But I don't think Steve Yzerman was looking just at those 4 games to say, well, they're not good enough. I think it was a lot of things that led up to that. The entire season that led up to that, to where Steve Yzerman looked at it and said, you know what? No, we're not good enough, and I don't want to sacrifice something maybe he wants to do in the offseason. Now, we have no reason to believe he'll do anything of measure, but you've got to give him a reason to want to add to this team.
So I want to just put Yzerman juxtaposed with a former Yzerman assistant, Pat Verbeek. He runs the Anaheim Ducks. He came to Detroit as Yzerman's right-hand man. He worked with Yzerman when he was in Tampa. Pat Verbeek fired their coach in Anaheim this week. And he said, quote, I expect to make the playoffs next season. Could you imagine? He hasn't been there 6-7 years. Said, I expect to make the playoffs next year. And quote, I'm going to be active and aggressive in making our team better. Love to hear that from Yzerman this week, wouldn't you? Who's been there twice as long?
Yeah.
I just think, how are you going to leapfrog Ottawa and Montreal, who are young hockey teams that are in the playoffs with good prospect pools, specifically in the case of Montreal, if you're not going to be active and aggressive in making your team better? Your team captain is now publicly saying, do something.
Well, and
we're dying on the vine here, back-to-back marches. Will you do something?
Now it's an opportunity to do something in the offseason. And we talked about Marner. Who knows if that's even going to be an option or not? We don't know. But do something this offseason so that the fans, even if you're not going to go out there and say, yes, we expect to make the playoffs this year, do something that says we expect to make the playoffs this year. I don't think anybody going into the season thought that this roster was better than last year's roster. And you missed out on the playoffs last year, and it was historically, you know, low point total that would have got you in. And then this year, it was even lower, but you were further away.
So whose side are you on, or what's your take on all this? 248-539-9797. Yzerman didn't make a move at the deadline, and his belief was this team wasn't good enough. And he was right. They weren't good enough. But Larkin's point is, we're not good enough because you're not making us good enough. Look, if we've been saying 2 straight years they don't have enough snarl and toughness and tenacity, the guy running the team should see that too and should have made that a bigger priority either in the offseason with the coaching change or at the deadline. And to go 0-3, what's your captain left to do but at least publicly cry for help at this point?
Yep.
He's like, hey man, I'm not Connor McDavid. I'm not Austin Matthews. I did a nice job at the Four Nations when there's good players around me. How much longer do I have to wait? I'm already in my prime. Sands of time are, you know, going down here. I mean, the clock's ticking.
Yeah.
I understand being 28 years old, being a lifelong Red Wing fan, and now the captain of the team, feeling like we've stalled out back-to-back years. And even if we go on 7-game win streaks, we still haven't done enough for Yzerman to invest in us in a more significant way.
Well, it's really going to come down to, is he going to do enough to invest in this team for him to keep his own job? Like, I mean, at some point, you're going to have to make the playoffs. At some point, you're going to have to be better year over year.
And it's so tough too, because there's promise. Like Casper looks good and Edvinson looks good and all of his first round picks have looked very good. So you want to see it through, but there is an expiration date. And clock's ticking on Larkin's prime as much as it is on Steve's job, right? I mean, that's a results business.
Yes, the clock is ticking because you're approaching now 10 years without being in the playoffs. It is. And I don't believe that one has to be connected to the other, but it's 100 years of Red Wings hockey. Do you want to set? Do you want to go through next year with that landmark and being a decade of playoff impotence?
Right. They've got the cap space. Who knows if Marner will be a free agent? But you got your plea from your captain. Let's get to Andrew in Livonia. You're on 97.1.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I was just calling to say that I think John would know this better than anybody else. What happens if you have an owner like we have? I know Yzerman's not doing a good job, but he could be better. But we have an owner in the Wings and the Tigers, and the players know he's not spending money. So but how do you mentally prepare?
Andrew, it's a little bit different in hockey. I mean, you could make that argument, even though they were willing to go out and sign Bregman in baseball this year. But in hockey, there's a salary cap. And they're governed by that, and it's not that they're not spending. I mean, Jim, I don't know if you know this off the top of your head. How much were they under the cap this year?
Oh, the Wings were with a couple million bucks of the cap.
They weren't like they were right there with all the other teams.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it. You guys are doing a great job.
Well, thanks.
Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Andrew. You too.
Appreciate it. Yeah, it's not like the Wings are sitting there $10 million below the cap while everybody else is out competing.
Right.
You could argue the reason they were up against the cap and not more competitive is you know, bad contracts that have been signed.
Signed the wrong guy, spent the wrong money, and that's always the plight of the GM. You've got to find out who are the right guys, how much are you willing to spend, and how long are you willing to spend that money on them.
So this makes me start wondering, how far back does this go? Does this go to the last offseason? Like the way they played for Lalonde out of the gate? Was there sulking because of moves like Gostisbehere, Wallman? I mean, then they see the Wallman move, and it doesn't make sense. I mean, the fact that Yzerman had to attach a 2 to move Wallman.
Were there guys in that dressing room that said, we would have loved to have Jake Wallman on this
hockey
team?
Well, they're clearly paying attention to the transactions.
Yeah, well, that's human nature.
Right, exactly. But to come out and publicly say it's one thing.
Also noteworthy that Larkin didn't do this at the time, right? Because then you worry about sending the team into the tank if you publicly sulk after the trade deadline. You still try to make it. They weren't good enough, and they don't make it. But now's the time to say something, right?
To a degree, the problem is he didn't. I don't know if he should have said what he said publicly. And the reason I say it, because I don't know if he said everything he needed to say. Like he said, guys were down. Well, they're down for the rest of the year because you didn't make a trade for them. You know, I mean, at some point,
I don't think he's saying they
were sulking.
They sulked for a month and a half. It may have taken the wind out of their sails. And for a team that was already on the bubble as it is, it did them no favors.
So a team capable of winning seven straight games two times couldn't get going again. They just continued to kind of, he doesn't want to give us anything. We didn't get our moral spark that we need. Meanwhile, you got a team that plays across the street, plays across the street from them, that didn't get a move for, they actually were sellers at the deadline last year, the Tigers.
Yes.
And they went into a little spin for four or five games, and then they were like, hey, let's not give up on our season.
Oh, you want me to say it? I'll say it. The Tigers are a mentally tougher team than the Red Wings. I mean, that goes without... We don't even need to bring it up. I mean, the Tigers showed a ton of fortitude, dug themselves out of historic deficit, dragged themselves back with a miraculous comeback. No, the Wings aren't that team. They're not that locker room. But how much of it is I got one hand tied behind my back because Justin Hull has to play 82 games? You know what I'm saying? Like, how much of this is intentional? Not intentional is a strong word. How much of this is negligence that caused this hockey team to be put in that spot?
But the GM doesn't view it as negligence because it's not.
It's all fitting. Part of the plan.
The plan isn't fitting Dylan Larkin's timeline, and that cat's out of the bag.
Yes. That's a really simple way to put it. His timeline doesn't fit the Iser plan.
And he's frustrated.
In his eyes, yes.
And he's like, I've put up with this crap for 7 years, Larkin, and you're not ever adding? I mean, come on. I think he is entitled to feel that way to a degree. But then Iserman, if it's not part of his plan, and you go to all the reasons why they don't have more talent on this team that we've went through, you know, a week and a half ago, it's like.
But I go back to it. This is not just Dylan Larkin speaking for Dylan Larkin. This is Dylan Larkin speaking for the guys in the dressing room. He doesn't say me. He talks about the guys. He talks about the group. So I'm going to tell you, he's speaking for a couple guys, maybe more in that room that feel the same way, which is a bigger problem. If it's like, oh, Larkin's soft and weak and isn't very good. What if the whole collective feels that way? That's how you run into a bigger issue here. Let's get to Mike on a cell. You're on 97.1.
Hey, good morning. So I'm not a hockey guy a lot, but I do think Iserman needs to make a miracle with this offseason, because with the trade deadline, when he told his players not to expect any help, you know, missing the playoffs for the last 9 years. If his name wasn't Iserman, he would have been fired like 2 or 3 years ago. I'm with Larkin. I'm standing by Larkin. Iserman needs to make a miracle.
It's so tough. Yeah, I mean, to stand by Larkin, even knowing Larkin's play was problematic, even knowing that Larkin being right means the team is soft. But I think he is right. I think they need more help.
They do need help. There's no question. Like, that's common sense. They need more help.
And to Larkin's point, does the GM have their back? He doesn't feel that way, and some in that locker room don't feel that the GM is doing everything they can to have their back and give them the best chance to compete. And that's a really tough wedge to drive into a pro sports organization.
Well, it is, but there's different ways to address it.
Of course.
And, I mean, who knows? Has this been something that is boiling with the players? And how long has this been boiling up? Is this the second trade deadline where they were hoping to get a little bit of help for a playoff push?
Just you tie two and two together. March has been the worst month. The last two Marches they haven't added. Listen, you could tell the team to grow up. You could also tell Iserman to do more. 248-539-9797. We got phones. We got ticket texts. We won't waste too much time on a team not in the playoffs. 9:35, we'll get to the Pistons. It's 97.1.
When it comes to an IRS collection or audit, you need a law firm that specializes in the resolution of all types of tax problems. And when dealing with the world's largest civil law enforcement agency, your case could take a lot of twists and turns. Your first call should be to an experienced law firm like Abraham & Rose. They're prepared to advocate on your behalf, no matter if it's civil or criminal or even the Michigan Department of Treasury. So whether it's personal income tax or business payroll taxes, you're going to need a real team of local lawyers, not a tax organization with a random individual that you're never going to meet. Visit abrahamandrose.com today or call 248-539-5040 so you never personally have to deal with the IRS.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
I'm Emma Greed, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Take a text and phone calls, 248-539-9797. It's okay to think it, but the current captain should not be saying it. If teams that bought were the ones that jumped, that's one thing, but the Canadians didn't buy, the Blue Jackets didn't buy, Larkin was terrible down the stretch, needs to look in the mirror more than anyone, Sam NGR. Larkin would die for this team, great captain. From Jack in the GPP, will these comments lead to a trade of Larkin?
I don't think, it's not going to go that far. I'm sure there'll be a discussion. There would have been a discussion either way. If you're going to be willing to say this in the media, I think he's probably had these conversations with Steve Yzerman. I mean, Dylan Larkin, yeah, he's willing to die for this team. Well, you know who else is as well? Steve Yzerman.
Well, that's what should happen. Is two passionate people who want to win need to put their heads together and get this team over the hump. I mean, some of that is Larkin needs to play better. He should not be excused, and we shouldn't be making excuses for his team and their performance. At the same time, he's also right. He could be the wrong messenger because he didn't play well, but he's also right. The GM does need to be more aggressive. Dave in Waterford, you're on 97.1.
Wow, I haven't heard that clip before. Mr. Larkin says there needs to be a spark. He's the captain. He needs to be a spark. It'd be nice to see, and I'm not trying to get down on him too much, but it'd be nice if he could win a faceoff in our own zone. A crucial face-off. I mainly called to say it's great to hear you guys talking about hockey, but I'm 100% behind Yzerman. You know, this is the first time after the trade deadline he actually spoke a little bit and said, you know, what do you want me to do? There were no great goalies to buy right then, and it's not about making the playoffs. It's about, you know, competing at a higher level to strike for the cup. And I throw it all, that last skid especially, on the top line players. You know, they didn't get it done. It wasn't the coach's fault. He's doing well. It wasn't Yzerman's fault. It was that top line. You can't lose 7-8 games in a row going down the stretch like that. And I think a lot of people are missing, you know, the loss of Andrew Kopp. Yeah, he wasn't a prolific goal scorer, but he scored and he was essential on that one line.
Yeah, but Dave, we got to be careful. We got to be careful. Do I think the fan base is sleeping on Kopp's impact? A little bit. But let's not make him Patrice Bergeron here. If that's keeping you out of the playoffs, then you got bigger problems as a hockey team.
He's a better defensive player than most people give him credit for.
Dave, I'll agree with you there, but let's not like they lost a Selke winner here. They lost a second line center who on many teams would be a third line center. That can't be what keeps you out of making the playoffs. Mike in Livonia, you're on 97.1.
Hey, boys. So honestly, Cookies, I kind of agree with you to next time. Obviously, the blame goes around.
Yeah.
You know, you could say Larkin, the rest of the team. Heck, everybody talks about you know, some of these draft picks coming up and blossoming, and they have to a certain extent, but they still haven't produced at a superstar level to me yet. I do want to put the blame on Yzerman, though, and here's why. I feel like he's, you know, I understand that Chris Illich is going through a divorce and there's some stuff going on in the background that we might not know about that might be, you know, handcuffing him to a certain extent. But I think he's kind of tying himself a little bit too much to these draft picks of his that he's waiting on. At this point, when you re-sign players like Larkin, Patrick Kane, you owe it to them to at least give them the best chance to win. You know, Patrick Kane is a year away from retirement at this point. So if you're not going for it, then what's the point of re-signing him? Dylan Larkin, he's 28. You know, you want him to at least get into the playoffs so these guys can build up some experience.
Right, Mike.
That we could talk about getting over the hump.
Yeah, that becomes a frustration. Like the Pistons, we're going to get to them a little later in the hour here, are going to learn through this series. Whether you think they're winning it or not, they're going to see what it's like. Hey, the fourth quarter, the bright lights in New York, you go 21-0. The other team's pummeling you. You're going to learn real quick what it takes. The Wings haven't even graduated to that step. So while I can respect we're not trying to just get in, we want to win the cup, you can't win the cup unless you just get in at some point.
And I don't think what's going on in Chris Illich's personal life has anything to do with what's going on the ice or the field.
It might be tempting to connect the dots. They offered Bregman a 7-year deal or a 6-year deal. That's a long-term commitment of $170 million. If they're able to make that commitment in baseball, I don't think there's going to be any issue offering a big deal in hockey.
No, there's not. The issue is the one making the decision. Is he willing to give money and term?
Scott Harris is coming and made more of an impact. You know, if we're gonna do the whole, they're both owned by the same guy, can Steve even be as good as Scott Harris? Which is not something we were saying 2-3 years ago. Well, Scott wasn't here 3 years ago, but I think that's another way of looking at it. Hockey and baseball are sports where it takes time, draft and develop, and it takes years, and yet the Tigers have turned this around in a much more dramatic way than the Red Wings have. Let's get to Heather with the news.
Police had a Roseville home surrounded for hours this morning. Numerous police agencies, as well as a SWAT team, responded to this house. It was right around 3:30 a.m. By 7 a.m., they say a man surrendered, but police are not confirming what led to this standoff, but there were reports of a possible shooting. Neighbors, of course, are weighing in as well. They say this person they were calling to, the police were calling to on a loudspeaker, had a long criminal record. Uh-huh. They say he's been causing problems in the neighborhood, including attempted robbery and assault. One neighbor also said she heard that there were two females in the hospital, but it has not been confirmed that anyone has been hurt. But that's going on in Roseville right now. Police are looking into an incident involving Kings star forward DeMar DeRozan at a sushi restaurant in California. There's video of this incident. He allegedly got into some sort of screaming match with another person, then briefly got physical as well. You can see at one point in the video, like, somebody is on the ground. DeRozan is like grabbing his legs. Apparently things escalated when this other person put a phone with a bright light into his face. He grabbed the phone, swatted it out of his hands. So apparently it is under investigation. No arrests or anything like that, but
it'd be interesting to see what details come out about it.
Yeah, I mean, now with video, things are always captured on video nowadays, so there is some evidence circling around.
Because you want to know, like, yeah, you guys shouldn't be throwing his phone in your face, but it shouldn't lead to that either.
Of course not.
So what's the missing thing? Yeah, I don't know.
We'll find out more, I'm sure. In an effort to cut down on players faking injuries, the NCAA announced changes to the injury timeout rules that will start this fall. So under this new rule, if medical personnel enter the field to evaluate an injured player after the ball is spotted by the officiating crew for the next play, the player's team will be charged a timeout. Then if the team doesn't have any timeouts remaining, a 5-yard delay of game penalty will be assessed.
It boiled over bad last year.
Oh, it certainly did. And teams were trying to find creative ways to get a stop of play, but also not lose time with a player. It just, it got way out of hand.
Close
I'm glad
the
they're addressing it. Yes.
This is sweet. A pair of brothers walking along the coast of a remote island in the Bahamas found a message in a bottle that had been written by a 14-year-old from Massachusetts in 1976.
Oh, that's a good year.
Yeah. Haha. Yes. It was a fine year.
It was a great year.
Was it?
Yes.
What happened that year, John?
I was born.
Yeah, I figured. So the message was in an old Pepsi bottle. It was written by a junior high student, Peter Thompson. And in the note, Thompson explained that he was taking this oceanography class. This note was going to be dropped off somewhere by the Coast Guards. And Thompson said, if you find this, please send it back to me. Here's my address. So these brothers were able to get in touch with him. And the crazy part is this kid, now a grown man, doesn't remember writing the message.
What?
I wrote a message in a bottle, I would be waiting for the day somebody found it till the day I died.
Yeah, you would be telling people, hey, when I was 11 years old, I wrote a message in a bottle, haven't heard anything back.
He doesn't remember, but he does say he has fond memories of that oceanography class that he took. Anyway, the brothers that found this note are hoping to eventually return it to Thompson in person.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Heather with the news. All right, coming up next, we'll talk about the NBA. We got the Pistons Saturday night. Look, you lose a game on the road, game one, all right, but to lose a game that way, it may cause some panic. It's 97.1. Pistons looked the part for three quarters. John, problem, they play four.
Well, I mean, they looked like they were trying to find their way in the first half, which, I mean, they were right there. They stayed with them. They were within, 2 points at halftime?
Look, I told you that I thought the Pistons could win this series, and some of it was that I liked the Pistons' fight, but I also thought the Knicks were beatable. And through three quarters, right where you want to be. You're fighting. You're clawing. You're scrapping.
It felt like I mentioned, like they were finding their way, and then in the third quarter, they found it. It was intense. The defensive side of things was tremendous. They were all over the place. They were getting steals. They were getting fast break opportunities. They were hitting threes. They won the third quarter by 10 points. They went in up 8 to the fourth, and then it just all fell apart.
The problem is the headline isn't the first three quarters. The headline is 21-0 run in the fourth quarter. The Pistons, a team that prides themselves on defense, gave up 40 fourth quarter points, and they confirmed the fears that they weren't ready for this. I mean, John, they start the fourth quarter, they can't even inbound the basketball. They're picking up shot clock violations, 3-second calls on defense. They did not look ready for the moment, which was the big concern. Anybody who said, hey, I'm not willing to pick them in this series, they pointed to their inexperience and their immaturity, and that's the story from game one.
And a lot of people will say, well, come on now. They were up 8 going into the fourth quarter. It was one bad quarter. Well, in the postseason, you can't have bad quarters. You can have bad moments. You can have bad minutes or bad stretches, but you can't have an entire quarter where you get outscored 21-0 and then you get outscored 40-21 in the entire quarter.
So then the question is, you had them losing a couple games in the series.
Sure.
I had them losing 3 games in the series.
I don't think we had anybody that called in that said they're going to sweep the Knicks.
So losing is understandable. Losing that way may have changed people's perceptions. Is there any Pistons panic out there? Did this change the way you view the series? And I think another question is just a more immediate. Is tonight a must-win game? 248-539-9797. Are you still picking the Pistons to win the series?
I am.
Okay, so you're not going to...
I'm not hitting the panic button,
okay.
No. It's... Did I think they were going to win both games in New York? No.
No.
And I kind of even thought that they might lose that first game.
Sure.
Losing it's not the issue. The fact that there was no response in that 21-0 run, and we didn't see anything from Cade and even Beasley, like there were just missed shots. Like there was nothing we saw timeouts. We saw TV timeouts. There was nothing that seemed to stop the momentum of the Knicks.
Yeah, because even when JB called timeouts, so they got a second to catch their breath, and you think, okay, just get one.
Yeah.
Go to the hoop. Cade, create something, whether it's for yourself or for others.
Yeah. Get fouled. Get some free throws.
Just something, just to stem the tide there a little bit. They didn't. How much of that translates? Because losing like that could linger if you truly aren't ready for the moment. And this could just be, hey, this is a great season for the Pistons. Regardless, they got in, they got a taste, they'll learn from it. Or can they learn from it as quickly as tonight?
Yeah.
And later this week when they come back home. John, if they lose tonight, I think people will say the series is over. I want to see how the game goes. Is Stewart healthy? I don't even know if he's going to play tonight. He's questionable. Do they look more composed? If they go down 0-2, I don't think the series is over. If they look composed and Isaiah Stewart's feasible, playable. Because then you come home, you got your chance to even it up, and I still think this team can hang with them for a 7-game series. And if the light bulb goes off for Cade, they're toast.
The only games that matter are the ones that they're playing right now. And we went through what we knew at the time on Friday. It was that they had played the Knicks. They had beat them 3 times. They had played them 4. They only lost to them once. This is, and I do think that there was a measure of experience last night where they got into that fourth quarter and they were just overwhelmed. And there was nothing that they did to stop that. And that's where I look at whether it's, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr., it's Tobias Harris who played well, Malik Beasley. Like, those are the guys that you kind of look to because they have that playoff experience. But the star of the show is Cade Cunningham. And in that stretch, there was nothing he did to take control of that game, to get it back in the Pistons' control, or just stop the momentum.
And I know they're going to take the ball out of his hands. That was clear. And he had 12 assists, but 6 turnovers, 2 in the fourth quarter. And in that stretch, he didn't score, and he didn't find a teammate to score. Beasley, big threes early, missed a couple in the fourth. Tim Hardaway Jr., missed a couple shots in the fourth. Tobias Harris, after a great start, need him in the fourth as well. Like, fine, you want a double Cade? Someone else has got to make him pay. I mean, it was a team-wide fourth quarter collapse.
It was. And maybe it's unfair that I'm putting it on Cade, but he is the Pistons star.
Yeah.
He is their leader. And he is got to be the guy that, whether it's a big steal that turns to an easy bucket, or it's just, hey, when we get to the half-court offense, what am I doing to create something for somebody else? If they're going to try and keep the ball out of my hands, how am I making it possible, feasible for somebody else to be able to step up and score at that point or do something?
248-539-9797. With Cade Cunningham and Asar Thompson and Jalen Duren, this is their first, and Isaiah Stewart, this is their first playoff series. And it was most noticeable to me early in that game when Asar Thompson picks up 2 fouls, including one 90 feet from the basket. Like, yeah. You just got to be smarter, dude. I know this is all new. It's another level of this. You got to be smarter. Jalen Duren's 3rd foul. What are we doing picking up a foul away from the hoop? You're the big guy. You can't be picking up unnecessary fouls, getting yourself taken out of the game. 3 in the key for Jalen Duren. It was 2. It may even have been 3 times in the game. You can't be giving them free throws. You can't be giving them an extra point, 2, 3 points. Because that's how you start to dig yourself a hole.
And sports are different.
Yeah.
But playoff intensity is, there are some correlations from sport to sport. And I remember my very first playoff game. It was actually against the Detroit Lions. And as soon as that ball was snapped, it was completely different. And there were things that I wish I could take back in that game. And fortunately for us, there's a week in between games. So you have a chance to watch the film and get a chance to look. There's 2 days in between when they played last and this game. I was a completely different player. Sure. From my first playoff game to my second playoff game. And I really think that Asar Thompson, Jalen Duren, Cade Cunningham, all these young guys are going to take a major leap. I don't think that there's going to be a hangover. I do think they're going to respond. I think what we see tonight is going to be something that Pistons fans are really going to be excited about.
Because it's a completely different feeling if they win tonight.
Oh, it changes your perspective completely.
It's their series to lose.
1-1 versus 0-2.
Coming back home, you put all the youthful inexperience behind you, you pick up a win tonight. Ticket Texture says, I love the way the Pistons have played this year, and hopefully they can build on it and get better in the offseason, but says, I thought they'd lose in five games, and I still think they'll lose in five. They may even be swept, Matt and Macomb.
See, I don't think they're going to be swept. And if I say that, because I still think they win the series.
Texter says, looks like all the pundits had the series right, guys.
After one game?
For one night, they were right.
Sure.
For one night, it was every assumption that was made about this team that was accurate. For one night, they were the inexperienced team that had no business closing out NBA playoff games and will be dispatched in short order. For one night, they looked the part that they were expected to play by many people nationally.
The question is, how are they going to respond? What did they take away from that? What type of experience do they now have that they didn't have Saturday afternoon?
Yeah, it all imploded on them. I mean, they didn't have a chance to catch their breath, and it is how they respond. I don't know how anybody could really, like, say it's over yet. I do think they need to win tonight to probably win the series. I don't see a world where they win 4 out of 5. It could happen, yeah. But, this is all about a response from the team itself. They're challenged now, but their best player is extremely, like this is it. All right, this is your first moment in this spotlight. How are you going to respond? And I even think J.B. Bickerstaff a little bit in terms of how he responds will show how good of a coach, how he responds in the locker room, but also how he manages things. He should deserve some criticism for the timeout situation.
So you think it's a must-win tonight. And John, you've said you think tonight is a must-win tonight. Could I paint the picture? And I would agree losing is going to put him in a tough spot. But what if they lose, but Cade has 40 points? And you go, oh, he's ready for this moment. And now you're coming home, where if you can take both at home, you go, let's drag this out and see what happens. If Isaiah Stewart doesn't play tonight, but after a few more days off, is greenlit to play the games in Detroit, you could still even this series up back home. I don't think tonight's a must win unless they look again that deer in headlights. If they look deer in headlights tonight, the way they lose, sure. But I think if they are a composed team, you get a big performance from Cade. I'm not willing to write the series off if they go down 0-2, dropping two road games.
If they play this alleged game tonight and lose, what makes you think they'll do it in 5 or 7 in New York?
Because you would say, my best player just got activated.
But
playoff
in some ways,
mode is here, right? I mean, that's,
you're explaining a scenario where I don't know if there's a higher ceiling for this Pistons team. So they still didn't win the game. You know, I hear what you're saying. My conclusion would be they just might not be good enough. Maybe the Knicks are flipping switches and stuff and in the playoffs, and the Pistons are just getting caught up to by everybody else. I mean, I do think one of the ways the Pistons got to their win total this year was that they simply showed up and played virtually every night, and some teams don't do that in the NBA. So I'm not giving up yet. I think definitely going overboard if people think it's over.
But I don't blame you if you thought this was going to be Knicks in 5 and you watched that game and thought, yep.
Oh, sure. If that was your mindset going in, that was your perspective, your context going in, then yeah, it was confirming. Yeah.
I mean, there's zero doubt Stoney's extremely confident right now based on this five-game sweep that he picked.
What's more interesting is if you're someone who picked the Pistons, was that jarring enough to have you going, oh boy,
yeah,
I was wrong already, or is this...
I told you guys earlier, and I'll say it again, I felt like watching that fourth quarter was watching the second half of the Lions in the NFC Championship game. They did things they normally don't do. They had some misfortune. They had some bad luck. They had some questionable calls.
It spiraled.
Josh Reynolds dropping balls is like the 5-second violation, you know?
Yes.
It just spiraled. And the thing about that with the Lions, their season was over. It was concluded. We didn't get to see how they would bounce back the next week. And that's what the Pistons have to do here, and they have to do it in 48 hours.
So is the Vildor face mask the Hardaway in and out?
Yes.
The dunk that hits the net and pops out.
Like, I'm surprised
I still
you guys
watch that.
I can't figure when out. I bring this up to you guys, though, I mean, you're laughing and we're joking about it, but
yeah,
like the connection, they scored 27 straight points, the Niners, in that game.
Yeah.
That's very much like the 20. It just was like, what the heck's going on here?
248-539-9797. We can make some time for you at the end of the show here. It's 97.1.
At First Merchants Bank, they believe the real value comes from building strong communities and relationships. With their new branch opening in the Fitzgerald neighborhood of Detroit, First Merchants Bank is excited to offer a banking experience that's welcoming, attentive, and dependable. Their easy-to-use, secure, and highly rated mobile banking app, it offers the opportunity for banking every day a breeze, allowing you to manage your accounts on the go. Their local attentive bankers are your partners in success. They take the time to get to know you, give you sound advice, and provide solutions that work for you. In fact, it's exactly what they've done for me over the years, for me and my family, and why they're my personal financial partner. With a passion for fostering community development, their team is committed to helping you and your neighborhood prosper. Experience the difference of banking with an award-winning bank that truly cares about your financial journey. All you have to do is visit firstmerchants.com/Fitzgerald to learn more about how they can help support you as well. First Merchants Bank, helping you prosper. firstmerchants.com/Fitzgerald is the website again. Member FDIC.
Some ticket text talking about the Pistons. Look, if you didn't think they were winning this series Saturday night, that fourth quarter, it confirmed everything you thought. Team that wasn't ready for the moment, deer in the headlights, 21-0 run. They couldn't stop the bleeding. Timeouts, TV timeouts, turnovers. They gave up 40 fourth quarter points. And some of that you don't have beef stew for the end, but 40 points given up in the fourth quarter for a team that prides themselves on defense. There's a lot to be concerned about. But that's one night.
It's one night.
If you believed the Pistons were winning this series, did it shake your confidence? Do you still think they're going to win this series?
Yeah, I mean, if you thought that they were going to win in six, you're counting on two losses at some point.
Probably one of the first seven, two at home. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like they were going to split. The best case scenario is that they were going to split in New York. Now they have that opportunity tonight.
New York doesn't scare anybody. Pistons will win tonight and run the table. Knicks are all fluff, from an unnamed texter. I wasn't overly impressed with the Knicks.
Well, they did win.
No, I know, but I'm saying, did you look at them and like look around the NBA? What the Thunder did, they decapitated the Memphis Grizzlies. Like, the Lakers got their ass blown out. I didn't look at the Knicks as a team that like, oh no, we got to go take on the New York Knicks.
But the difference is we're in this world right now where we haven't been in the playoffs in a decade, haven't won a playoff game in 17 years, we have no idea how this team will respond.
Mm-hmm.
And every year it's going to be different, but we have no idea. And Cade's never been here. Sar Thompson's never been here. Ron Holland has never been here. Like, you just don't know how this team is going to respond. But I do think, I predict that we're going to like the response that we see tonight.
Texter said, maybe there's a bigger topic with Cade here we could address in the offseason. He's not a true point guard. His turnover numbers certainly reflect that. It would help him and the team if we got invested in a traditional point guard to help bring the ball up, get us into our offense, and then get the ball to Cade in his spot so he doesn't have to use all his energy bringing it up.
I mean, I don't necessarily know that I agree with that. He was good at it throughout the course of 82. Why all of a sudden is I mean, was that concern before?
That's not an energy problem either. It's a ball protection problem. He needs to protect the ball better. Yeah. He needs to be smarter with his passes.
Typically, the guys with big assist numbers also have big turnover numbers because they have the ball a lot. With Cade Cunningham, I don't care that he's not a traditional point guard. You know who's not a traditional point guard? Luka. And I know that's high praise, but Luka's a bigger guard who's not jump out of the gym athletic, but can create his own shot, get to his spots, punish a defense, run the pick and roll. That is Cade's game, whether you think he'll be as good as Luka offensively or not. That is Cade's game. Can you experiment with other guys bringing the ball up? Yeah, there's 48 minutes.